This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust, and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Get on the floor!
What's up, people? This is You're Not Listening, a podcast that teaches you how to actively listen to music one song at a time. My name is Sean O'Loughlin.
Hi, I'm Jim O'Loughlin.
And we have another really special episode for you today because we have another really special guest, someone that I wanted to get on the show the day that we started.
True.
We have Reverend Peyton from Reverend Peyton's Big Damn Band on. Yes. Thanks for joining us, Rev. Appreciate it.
How's it going? Glad to be here.
Awesome to have you. I didn't think we could actually make this happen, but we did, and I'm really excited about it. Excited to talk about some sweet blues music today.
That's right. Well, you bothered me until I just couldn't take anymore. And I'm like, man, I'm just going to have to do this. So these guys ain't going to go away.
That's exactly what we, that was our plan.
It worked.
That was 100% our plan. Just don't
man,
shut up
I'm
until
so
he does it to get us out of his hair.
Oh, man. Now I feel bad.
Kind of.
You know what? It's good to know that it works. So we'll just have to keep doing that for
the
people.
The squeaky wheel gets the grease, my
That's
friend.
It. That's
the squeaky
it.
Wheel
and
gets
was
the
all,
grease.
It was all out of love. All out of love, I promise.
That's right. All we want to do is share your music, Rev. Come on, give us
well,
that.
Perfect. We'll help. We'll do what we can. Do what we can to help anyway.
So if you haven't heard Big Damn Band, they're blues band out of, are you in Indiana?
Is yeah, Southern Indiana. So we live in Nashville, Indiana, Bean Blossom, technically, in Brown County down the Southern Indiana Hills. It's this is actually the big crazy time of year here. We get over a million visitors to a town of 800.
Oh, wow.
In the fall, in this month. So it's insane. I'm used to like being gone this time of year. Normally I'm never home. I'm always on tour. October is the biggest month for touring bands worldwide, actually.
Oh, wow.
So I'm used to, at least for big tours, and I'm used to just absolutely never being home. So being home for a Brown County October is bittersweet. It's sweet in that it's the most beautiful place to be. But the bitterness is all the tourists has made it to where just going up to the store, it could be a giant ordeal. It's wow. Nuts. Just getting through town. Wow. If you need a light bulb or something, you're in
you
trouble.
You got to set aside your afternoon.
Oh, yeah. It takes a day to get there and back. And wow. It's crazy. So
that's crazy. Well, you guys got some really awesome, you know, down-home blues music coming out of there. And I want you to give a quick elevator rundown of, you know, kind of who you guys are, where you came from, and what you do. And then we'll get into the music.
All right. Well, I'm Reverend Peyton from Reverend Peyton's Big Damn Band. And I'm the front man of the Big Damn Band, which is just me on the guitars and lead vocals and my wife Washboard Breezy on the washboard and Mr. Sad Max Centini on the drums. And all of the I guess the melody part of the music side of it is all me. I play the bass with my thumb and the lead with my fingers at the same time in the old country blues finger style way of doing it. And I have have been doing this for nothing but this since 2006, as far as the Big Damn Band. We've toured in 38 countries, four continents, 48 of the 50 states. Every one of our records every record since 2008 that we put out has made it to like Billboard Top 10 for blues records. Yep. Every record that we've put out since 2008 has been has debuted at number one on the iTunes blues chart. You know, we've done a lot with a little. Yeah.
Well, it's such a unique sound. Do you guys hear a lot of other artists in your area that have a similar sound to that, or do you think you've kind of tapped into something really unique?
No, not really, man. I mean, we come from a bluegrass area, you know. Yeah. And every now and then I have someone, maybe a well-intentioned person, but a well-intentioned moron nonetheless. They'll go, man, I love your bluegrass music. And I'm like, ooh. Well, you still don't love bluegrass music. We don't play bluegrass. I play country blues, and it's very much blues, and
it's straight blues.
It's blues. Yeah, we play blues music, and it's you know, I sort of come from that the rural part of the blues spectrum, the earliest stuff. I got real into Charlie Patton, Bucca White, mm-hmm. you know, Son House, Robert Johnson, Furry Lewis, Fred McDowell, that stuff real early on.
So how did you end up finding that in the first place?
Well, so when I was 12 years old, my dad, he says, hey, we're going to go get a guitar. And so you're coming with me. And me being a smart ass, like I was, you know, this is the kind of thing that no 12-year-old should ever say. But I remember saying, like, you can't afford a guitar and you don't know how to play. And he said, I can afford it and I do know how to play. And I didn't know my dad had sold his guitars when I was born. He needed the money. Wow. So for a decade of my life, I didn't know that he could play. We never had encountered a guitar and him in the same room as me ever. So we go and we got the cheapest guitar. It was a K state of the art, like the cheapest guitar there is. And no amp, electric guitar, no amp. And we came home and he starts just banging away on all these chords, these old songs. He could play all kinds of stuff. And I couldn't believe it, you know. And it just floored me. And I haven't put the thing down since. And that's the God's honest truth. So from there, you know, he taught me everything he knew. And that took about a week. And I started giving guitar lessons when I was 13. And so after about a year of playing, I had students. And I got obsessed with blues. And how I did it was, like, my dad, he loved Johnny Winter. That was always his favorite. Johnny Winter. Really? Loves the Stones. Yep. Okay. Loves CCR. Okay. All that stuff is really blues music at its core. You know what I mean?
All based on the blues, right? Johnny Winter especially, right?
Yeah, Johnny Winter especially. You know, so I wanted to know who they listened to. Well, the first name all them guys you come to is like Muddy Waters. Well, who'd Muddy Waters listen to?
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, well, he wanted to be Charlie Patton, you know? So I just kept going back and back, you know? And when you're a kid and you start playing guitar, and I mean, an E chord seems like an impossibility at first. When someone first hands you a guitar, you're like, well, I'll never be able to play this E chord, you know? And then you hear someone like Charlie Patton play literally two things at the same time on the guitar. Two separate things at once. Robert Johnson playing two separate things at once. Mm-hmm. And I became so
floored. Well, Robert Johnson had the devil behind him, so.
Mean, well, you know. But when you have when you have that hat, when you hear that, you know, at least me, I was so obsessed with that. I was like, that is what I want to figure out how to do. And also, too, growing up in a very rural place, the stuff that they were talking about in those early blues songs actually spoke to me more than you know, some of the later, especially the Chicago style blues of like the 80s and 90s, you know, which, when I first got a guitar, I was 12 years old in 93. So, if that puts me in a time and place, you know, Stevie Ray Vaughan and stuff was the thing in blues.
Yeah.
So I, being into that other stuff, really baffled people.
Yeah. Okay. But when you're 12 years old playing not only blues, but the original blues, I mean, you're going back to, you know, Elmore James. I mean, you're talking the beginnings is not popular for a 12 year old.
No, no, no. And I'm earlier in Elmore, the stuff Elmore James listened to, you know, that's okay, the kind of stuff I was into, you know, like I mean, I were talking, I just kept going back and back, you know, not that I didn't like Elmore James, but I mean, like I was into the early stuff, you know, But I'll never forget, man. I know exactly. Like I started, you know, getting CDs and, you know, like trying to like spend my money on CDs. And I got this CD and it was called Bottles, Knives, and Steel. And it was a compilation of slide guitar, early blues slide guitar.
Okay.
And that CD, between that one and like my first Charlie Patton CD, like those were life changing. Because when you first hear that stuff coming out, it's like, it's almost like a foreign language you're hearing for the first time, right? I mean, it's so different than especially the super produced stuff that was coming out of the late 80s, early 90s, right? I mean, that was like when music was the most produced. Like people talk about it being like overproduced now. I don't know, man. I think maybe the late 80s, early 90s, it was even more overproduced. There's a lot of computers doing things now that weren't, you know, wasn't all computers then. But man, they spent a lot of money and time. That was when people would take a year on a record. You know what I mean?
So, well, you know you're listening to a song that came out of the 80s when there's like the most reverb you've ever heard on the drum kit.
Yeah, well, there's everything. It's like, everything they, it's like let's just throw everything at this song. Everything yeah. there is, let's put it all on the song.
Exactly.
You know? They so often did that.
Well, that's what spawned the whole grunge thing in the 90s is people wanted out of that, and then it just went down to bare bones.
That's right. That's right. It was anti that.
Yeah.
You know, what had happened to rock music, you know, at that time was, you know, just like you said, it was overproduced. It was over everything. You know, it was over the top. And, you know, with grunge, it was underproduced and definitely not over the top. So, check this out. I mean, I'm coming up, I'm into blues music. I'm into country blues stuff. And then you've got, when I'm in high school, you've got Kurt Cobain covering Lead Belly songs on MTV.
Right. Right.
You know, like that was like, that
felt unplugged, right.
Yeah. I felt almost justified. You right. know what I mean? Like, look, Kurt Cobain thinks it's cool. You know, of course he does.
Of course, right.
You know what I mean? Like that, like that's kind of how I felt. And then, you know, like I remember like MTV Unplugged being a big, like, I thought that was the coolest thing in the world, you know?
Well, it was at the time.
Oh, it was. I mean, it was the coolest thing at the time that anyone was doing. And, you know, like I'm not a huge Clapton fan, but his Unplugged is probably his best work. Right. I mean, mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. most people agree with that. That's the best thing he ever did. And, you know, he's covering tons of old blues stuff, country blues stuff, you know? It felt in a lot of ways like it was like the timing of it. And when we started playing out, no one was doing what we were doing at all. No
right.
one.
That's what I was wondering. Right.
No one. And it was, and people didn't understand it. They didn't know what we were all about. And like, we'd say blues and they'd be like, oh, we thought you were going to sound like Stevie Ray Vaughan. You don't,
Right. But it's so different. And especially when you watch some of the videos, of some of your live performances and stuff, like it's captivating to watch. So I imagine even if they thought they weren't into it, like it's easy to get sucked in.
Well, we've done it one fan at a time. We never had any big like national press. We never had a song in a big Scorsese movie. And the music business never really gave us anything. Cause like at the time we were coming up, it's like, well, we should go play blues clubs. Right. That makes sense. Like at the time there was tons of blues clubs, just way mm-hmm. fewer now. And they would all go, nah, this ain't really blues. Like we think of it, you know, I'm not. So we had to come up. We got our start really, man, at like punk rock clubs because the blues clubs said that we weren't blues enough because they just weren't they weren't informed as to what that early stuff was. They didn't know who R.L. Burnside was, right. You know, forget Robert Johnson. They didn't have stuff like R.L. Burnside. If you weren't a Stevie Ray Vaughan clone, and I'm not knocking Stevie Ray Vaughan. I got no problem with SRV. I think SRV is great. But if you didn't sound like that, then they didn't want anything to do with it. They're like, nah, this ain't our thing. So we had to come up and, you know, pretty much just create something, carve out a career for ourselves.
So you had a backdoor it because you can't even get past the managers at all these clubs, these blues clubs that, you know.
That's exactly right. Breezy always says that. She always says we had to come in the back door, and we did. We had to come in the back door everywhere. And then, you know, now like the few blues clubs that are left, they – you know, some of them we play and some of them, unfortunately, we just are too big for them. They don't hold enough people for us to play. Right, so, right. Which is a shame, isn't it? But, I never wore short pants on this stuff. Like I don't believe that the country blues, rural blues, hill country blues, any of it. I don't believe that it's a dead music. Like, for instance, and I'm not knocking this either, I love New Orleans jazz, but let's face it, no one is out there making New Orleans jazz records that isn't
love that stuff.
I love it, right? But it's only in New Orleans, right? It's not like a living musical language that people are speaking to each other. It's like a museum thing. You go to New Orleans and you just hear it there, and it's like the same 15, 20 songs. And, you know, basically like if Preservation Hall jazz band's doing it and they're keeping it alive. And if it weren't for them, then it would be relegated to history books. Right. Yep. I mean, that's what it is.
Right.
So if you're not careful, every genre of music that isn't on top 40 radio can become that, right? I mean, we are very close to even like stuff like certain kinds of rock and roll ending up that way, where you're only going to see it, you know, maybe someday you'll go to Beale Street and there'll be guys just singing, you know, Sun Record style stuff. And that's the only thing, that's the only time you're ever going to hear it. And it's going to be like, right, man, remember people used to sing like this in the 50s, son? This is really crazy. You never believe it. I mean, like, then that, so like, to me, I think if you're not making new music that's speaking to people that are alive now, then you're on your way to making something be a dead language. And I'm always trying to tell people, like, with like their, you know, some of these blues society people, I'm like, look, I love that you have this blues society. Yeah, I'm thankful for it. But if you're not promoting bands that are actively out there touring, then you're not really promoting blues. You're actually hurting it, because right, you're making it look like it is a dead thing.
Yeah, you're doing an oldie show. You're doing an old right, circuit, right? Right.
That's right. And that is not what I've ever been about. I was like, even when I was younger, it's like I didn't want to sound like Sun House necessarily. I wanted to sound like Reverend Peyton. I've always right, been that way. Right. And, you know, sometimes people are like, I think they're confused by it. Cause so often when people say they play old rural blues, country blues or whatever, mm-hmm, they are trying to be almost like that museum throwback. They're trying to, you know, note for note cover somebody's song.
Right.
But here's the thing about that. You, if you're not living something, right? Like Sun House lived those songs. So when you do that song, it's never going to be as good as Sun House did it, because he lived it and wrote it and created it, and it bled from his soul. So you're never going to do as good as Sun House. I don't care how good you are, you know. Like Sun House, that he was the one that did that. So what you have to do as an artist, I think, is you have to figure out how you're going to do that yourself, right? Like it's got to come from you,
from the soul.
And if you want people, that are alive now to really care beyond just a historical thing, you know, a footnote in a history book about music, then you have to be playing and creating music that is alive
some new
today
stuff out there. Yeah.
And so, that doesn't necessarily mean you have to follow some top 40 trend. It just means that it has to be living, breathing music.
So part of so you're educating is what you're doing.
Well, I mean, what I like to do is I like to let people know where stuff comes from, because I think it's important. But I also try to make music that if they didn't know where it came from, it wouldn't matter. They'd still like it. Yeah, you know.
But you even playing is educating them to your music, because they haven't heard it before. They don't know anything about it. I mean, I see some of the festivals you played, Bonnaroo and everything else. I'm thinking, okay, a stage in that kind of venue, like, we're going to win this crowd over. And you're going to learn something that you didn't know before.
Yeah, I mean, that's the hope, you know. And I mean, we just try to make it to where, you know, the show is compelling enough and interesting enough to where if you came there going, I'm not going to like this, then I want to try to win you over. You know what I mean? Right. I want to try to win the person in the back of the room. That's how we've had to do it, man. One fan at a time. That's the way to do it. We get invited to a festival, and then we've had to do it that way. It was no like. There's never been like a big radio hit for us or anything. We started out in a van where we were homeless and we had nothing. We first set out like really on the road. We started doing shows, and it was kind of like, man, there's too much going on for us to do our job, but there's not any money coming in. So what are we going to do? So, you know, I'd been a professional musician since I was 13. I gave guitar lessons, did all this stuff. Then I had a period of time where my hands quit working. I'd had surgery on them, and it was a disaster. And that was when I was 18 and 19, basically. So after that, then I was all in. Once I got my hands back, it took me a minute to really get going. Once I got cooking and rocking and rolling again, I was like, man, this is what I want to do. I don't want to not do this ever again. So it didn't matter to me. It was like.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I hear you now.
Okay. No, I was just saying, you know, that could have been a setback that just completely turned you around and been done and walked away. But I actually read a little bit about that when I was doing my research for tonight. Like, and that was, you had to go get a couple other opinions, and you did surgery to your left hand to change it all up?
Yeah, I had surgery on both hands. And I had a doctor tell me that, like, he said the exact words were, son, you're going to have to find something else to do.
Oh, man.
Well, that's what you need to hear.
You know, well, it wasn't. I refused to give up.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I ended up finding a doctor I'd heard about, and he felt my hands, and he said, man, he goes, I think I can fix them, but I won't know unless I get in there and start cutting. And I'm like, well, when do we, can we can do it today? And he goes, not today.
Here's a knife. Let's do it.
Yeah. But which is I was ready. Exciting and terrifying at the same time.
I was ready that, like that second, you know what I mean? So, yeah. But you know, anyway, it ultimately like the, that ended up being a good experience. Cause I made it a good experience, but it, it lit a fire under me and it was, you know, definitely a big part of the reason why we just set off into the night and start doing it. And,
defining moment. Yeah. Wow.
And the, you know, we would eat, condiments for food. We would sleep in the van all the time. We never had, could afford even a hotel or nothing. Slept on the ground in the desert, slept at truck stop parking lots. We did, we would sneak into hotels in the morning and, like go to their pool area where there's always a shower and try to shower inside there to get cleaned up. Do truck stop showers, things like that. I mean, it was, as lean as you can live. And then, you know, slowly we just built it up. And I mean, I remember the first time we went to Salt Lake City, there was 9 people. Wow. And the second time there was 90.
Wow.
And it's just, we just did it little by little like that. And, you know, not all of them worked that good. But you know, a lot of them did. And it just has been a slow progression that we believed in, that we believe would work. And while the music business, a lot of times just kept closing the door going, nah, you know, blue, the blues side would be like, ah, this is country blues. This ain't really like Stevie Ray Vaughan. The, you know, I've been told, that we're too country, even though I don't think we're country, we're rural, we're not country. Big difference. You know, I've been told all kinds of stuff in the music business by all kinds of people that don't really know. But the beauty of it now is that anybody can access almost anything, you know, thanks to, you know, some of these things like YouTube and Spotify and whatever. You know, you don't have to go buy the CD. You can just listen to it. Now, it's a double-edged sword. Artists don't make any money off this. But if people find out about you and then you can tour and you can build up a fan base that way, then it works for you. And it's been a learning experience because the entire music business has changed since we started doing this.
Well, that's a amazing segue because I actually, that's how I discovered you was through YouTube. I was just telling my dad before you came on. I remember 4 years ago, I was listening to a song. I just found it again called Rocket to the Moon by the Moonlight Howlers. Okay. Which is a rockabilly tune. I was really big into rockabilly for a while. I still listen to a lot of it, but this song was, I had this song playing, and then when it ended, the next auto play was a song called Raise a Little Hell by Reverend Peyton's Big Damn Band. And I fell in that rabbit hole, and then I just went and found all your music. And so that's exactly how it happened for me. One more fan, like you said, one fan at a time.
Yeah, just, and that's it. And little by little, man, that's how it's worked.
And we were planning on getting tickets to the Bull Run right before the pandemic hit.
Yeah, up
in Shirley, Mass. Yep.
But so I wanna talk about a couple songs. We talked about this beforehand for anyone who is curious. We did talk a little bit before we started recording, and we decided that we're gonna talk about a couple of Rev songs. The first one we're gonna do is We Deserve a Happy Ending, and I wanna go ahead and listen to it. Go ahead to the official You're Not Listening Spotify playlist, or click the link in the show notes to watch it on YouTube, and we will come back and talk about it. First song we're gonna do is We Deserve a Happy Ending.
So Rev, I mean, you were just saying how, you know, artists have lived and you have to obviously have that in your soul to really kind of, you know, feel that in the same way. I mean, you lived it really when you were on the road like that. I mean, and I read the story about trying to cross over into Canada and your drummer ended up having to sleep in the woods and stuff. And
yeah,
which is hilarious and crazy. But you, I mean, eating condiments and you know, heading into the pool to take a shower, you did live it, whether you want to admit that or not, but you did really.
Yeah, I mean, we have been, you know, since the beginning, man. And I've been one way or another, you know, and every song that I write, like I'm not a fiction writer, right? Like some people are,
yep.
You know, like there's certain artists that they create a fiction that is born of maybe some true life, but it's a fiction story,
right?
And
right.
I've never been that. I'm a nonfiction writer in all my songs.
So the song, I don't remember even the title of it, but I remember some of the lyrics of, you know, one more thing goes wrong and, you know, we lose our house. You know, if mm-hmm. the septic breaks down, we lose, you know, we lose everything. Is that same?
Every song that I've, every single song that I've ever written,
True Life,
has been true to life. Wow. Every single one.
Wow.
So powerful. I mean, and so I mean that's sort of the thing. I think with blues, it has to be like some genres. It doesn't necessarily have to be. A lot of Americana music is like straight Americana. What I would call straight Americana music is, which is kind of like, you know, country music outside of Nashville, right? But a lot of Americana music is fiction. People creating stories, they create tales, and they spin yarns and things. But with blues, I don't know if it's possible to honestly play blues and not have, you know, have songs that are born of real life, you know?
Yeah, truth, right?
So just so you guys know, I figured out how to change my input so everyone could listen at the same time, and it apparently won't let me do it when we're recording, so we're not going to be able to listen together.
Well, we know. I don't know about you. I know what the song sounds like.
You probably have a good idea. And I've listened to it a bunch of times too. So yeah.
Let's, and everyone should go check it out on our YouTube page so they can see the music video, because we'll talk about the music video too.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's get right into it, Dad. What you really love this song too, right? What was your impression?
Well, I love the visuals, obviously, too. But even this is one of the songs. A lot of times, obviously, when you hear the song and then you see it visually, it takes on a whole different connotation. But this is the one that even if I just heard it without the video, would have been just something that just kind of grabbed you and captured. But the video is crazy. is hilarious.
This song is one that actually Starbucks plays this song inside of Starbucks.
Oh, nice.
We've had a couple songs that they picked up. Starbucks has their own radio station.
Oh, really?
They play inside of there, and it's curated. They have people that literally their job is to pick songs to play inside of Starbucks.
It's kind of a cool job.
And and the one we had three or four picked up, and they're all off of Front Porch Sessions, strangely enough, which is the record this is from. Mm-hmm.
That's my favorite record of these.
Well, cool. Excellent, man. Well, thank you. But they picked the one they played the most is actually "We Deserve a Happy Ending." Strangely enough, man. And as far as the you know, you're talking about the video. So the song is for me is actually very heavy. Like, I don't know if people listen to that. I think that I was afraid that if people would listen to the song and think it was cute, and it's not cute. It's heavy, and so that's why the video is such. That it is. I wanted the video to have like a weight to it, you know. And I told everyone, I said, "Man, I have this idea for video, but it's only going to work if someone comes busting our front door completely on fire." And they're like, "What?" And I'm like, "No, trust me, it's going to be awesome, you know." And they're like, "No, like you can't." Like, so I looked into like maybe hiring like a real stunt person, right? But the stuntmen, they don't want to be set on fire. Like, they'll be like, "Man, drop me out of an airplane before you set me on fire." Like, that's the most dangerous stunt there is. So I was like, "Man, let me look into how to do this. Maybe we can do it ourselves," which just shows maybe how insane I am. I don't know. But so I went and I just started researching how they set people on fire in movies. And in movies, one of the main reasons it's so hard is that when you set someone on fire, there's a lot of things you have to do. So setting someone on fire and then making it look like the actor is actually the hard part. Setting someone on fire is a very dangerous stunt. If they don't have to look like anybody, right? They just have to be a human being on fire. Then it's easier to do. Does that make sense?
Right.
So that does
make sense. You are hilarious.
Because you
hilarious.
I never thought I would ever have a podcast where we have someone say setting someone on fire is actually really easy.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right.
Well, it setting them on fire is easy. Setting them on fire and not burning them is hard. So that's the hard part.
The small details.
Just the small details. So I start like going through just researching this and you know, Breezy, she's like, "Man, don't talk to your buddy Jim about this because he's going to volunteer." Well, I knew I was going to have to talk to my buddy Jim about this because I had a feeling he might volunteer. So I told him a story about the idea and everything. And he goes, "You set me on fire. You can do it. I'll do it."
So we all have that friend.
Yeah. My buddy Jim is one of my best friends in the whole world. And he's also the same age as my mom. And I mean, we hang out almost every day, you know, and he's the most fit person I know. He is one of the strongest people I've ever met. He is definitely the handiest human being probably alive. He can do anything. It's unbelievable. Most of his food comes from the woods.
Oh, wow.
He is just absolutely incredible. And he's also absolutely fearless. So he wasn't scared of this, you know. So we start running little tests, you know. First, we burn the bottom half because that's easier to do. And if something goes wrong, you're not permanently disfigured in your face, right? So we start running tests, and it's working. Right? We can set him on fire. So when it comes time to really do it, we only had enough stuff. Like I probably could have done it a handful of times, but I didn't want to do it more than once. I didn't want I didn't want to take chances. I didn't want to push our luck. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's like, we have to do this once. We have to do it right. Well, it gets close to the time we're supposed to be doing this, you know, and Jim goes, man, I'm glad if it's going to be someone getting burned up, it's me. I've lived a good life. And I'm like, oh my God, Jim, don't talk like this. No, I've lived a good life. If you're going to burn someone up, burn me up. It'll be good. I want you to know I've lived a good life. Don't feel bad if I get burned up. I'm like, no. This can't be right, man. You can't. This ain't. Don't even say it, you know. So that actually freaked me out more than anything. I felt like we had it under control until he started saying that. Then I got scared. I'm like, oh God, what if I burn Jim up? That'd be the worst thing ever. So in doing this, I'm like, you understand too. All these videos, man, they look like they're big, like Hollywood productions, right? We've done them all ourselves. All these people are friends of mine. My family. Wow. If you start looking at our videos, you'll see the same people over and over
again. Yeah, right.
I mean, it's because they're all people I know. So all the people in this video, We Deserve a Happy Ending, they all would, with the exception of two, every one of those might be at our house on a normal time at any barbecue or something we might have. Like, those are all some of my best friends in the whole world, literally. And my mom and dad helped me too.
Do you realize what you just said? You talked about all your friends being over your house and a barbecue and setting people on fire all in the same sentence. So is that a ritual that you guys do on a regular basis?
Okay. Weird stuff is definitely what we do. So people know that. So,
and was this video one take then?
Oh, it had to be one take. Yeah. We couldn't be more than one take. Yeah, it had to be. And I put the fear of God in everybody. I go, look, I can only set Jim on fire one time.
One time.
Everything's gotta be right. And my friend Jess, who was in charge of wrangling the pig, I'm like, look, I don't care what happens. You've got to get that pig off the porch. If you have to drag that thing off the porch, you've got to drag it off. So that's exactly what happened. But when it all went down, you got to understand, I live in a little tiny, you know, tiny cabin. And all those people, you know, the motorcycle, the tandem bike, all of those people, the pig, were inside of essentially a one room cabin with a guy on fire, completely engulfed in flames.
Right.
And then everything had to be timed. So I have a friend at the door who is sending people out in a very coordinated manner. And then it all has to be timed perfectly with the song so that the last thing that happens at the end of the song.
Right.
And we did it in one. We got it right the first time. It was incredible.
Wow.
Of all the videos we've ever done, that was the one I'm the most proud of because it was just so much like my mom was playing the playback music on my little Bluetooth speaker right in front of us. My dad had a fire extinguisher in case Jim didn't go out in time. He was one of the guys that had a fire extinguisher. The dog was the dog of our best friend, Michelle. The dog since passed away. But I mean, like all these people, I'm telling you, it's one of our best friends in the whole world.
All right, so this is a one take obvious video and it worked. And the reason I think I love the video the most almost wasn't all of the action on the right hand side of it, but you folks, especially you, just have this look of joy playing.
Well,
I'm guessing you must have been also like just trying not to laugh your head off.
So what we were trying to do is just I told them, don't look at what's going on over there. Right. I said, just look at the camera.
Right.
And I almost was the one that screwed it up. Of everybody else, I was the one almost because Jim, he burnt me on my arm. He got so close to me. He wasn't supposed to get as close to me. And I looked. And I looked away real fast. If you watch, it burnt my arm.
Oh,
not like bad, but like, I mean, I'm talking like a hair singed off my arm. And so like I when that happens, like I just instinctively look to make sure you're not on fire. You know what I mean? And so that was kind of that. I almost screwed it up by doing that. But luckily it you know, I caught myself and ended up not running the whole thing, and everybody did great.
So the video,
and none of those people are professional actors or anything, man. You know,
yeah,
I mean, like the buddies that shot each other, you know, like that squib, they made that squib looking it up on the internet, how to do it, you know? And that was a handmade thing, and it looks so real. It's messed up, you know? And then the fire, I mean, we can't afford special effects. Special effects are expensive.
Right.
Setting up someone on fire is actually not expensive. You know, it's just dangerous. So we set someone on fire, and they're in my house with all my friends and family.
Right.
He's in my house on fire with all my friends and family. I'm like, this is either this, like, if this goes bad, I will be a pariah forever. Like, this will be like this. I won't even be allowed to show my face anywhere. Like, I'll have to change my name, you know, like that. But I thought, man, if I pull it off, I really think this is going to be great. And I really love the song. But I didn't want the song to, like, I didn't want it to be some, like, cute video, because I felt like the song was heavy. Like, to me, the song was a heavy song. And I think a lot of people miss that, you know, right, but it's a heavy song. You know, the verses are heavy. And when I wrote it, it was a heavy place. So, like, I wanted the video to be a little bit heavy. And everyone said, man, what if you did the same video but without the fire? And I go, well, it's not as cool. Like, that wouldn't be like, I'm like, I want someone busting out the front door on fire. I'm like, that's the main part of this video. I said, if I could have 100 people just bust out my front door on fire, then I would. I'm like, that's the most important part. That's the linchpin. I'm like, if I'm not sitting there, and as soon as I start in singing, there's someone bust out my front door on fire, then I don't want to do it. So I'll do something else. I'll come up with some other ideas.
Those are words I say every day. You're right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Words to live by. I want to talk about the music a little bit.
hey, I
can't get the visual out of my.
So, never mind, fellas. I'm sorry. We were just talking about my friend, and she came here.
Oh,
so my friend with the dog in the video.
Nice.
And we were happy to be Michelle. She just walked in the front door, and I wasn't expecting it. So
her ears must have been ringing.
Yeah, something sorry. Like that. So sorry about that. But anyway,
no, that's good.
So, but this. With that video, my buddy Tyler Zoller, who's done a lot of still photos and different things with us, he shot that. But we had to rent a lens because my porch is so small that we had to get like a special fisheye lens.
Yeah, you can see it looking at it, looking at the screenshot of it now, and you can see that it is that kind of fisheye. Set up. It's interesting.
Yeah, you can see it. If you look at it, it had to be that way so you could see you know, all the action happening. And then it had to be set up, had to be framed perfectly so that, you know, there's enough of us in it to where, like, that's what the video is, but
right.
You can still see all this stuff that's happening.
All the action.
And
right,
you can
right.
see how little my porch is, man. Like, it's so funny. My house is tiny. I mean, I'm not kidding when I tell you my house is tiny. It is a little tiny thing. Like, when people come over, and it's on a hill, so, like, you can't go out the back door. And, like, I know those people, it wasn't like coming like a clown car where they're all coming out the back door. They all had to be inside my house. That's the way it works. Like, you can't, that didn't work that way.
And on fire, right.
So everybody had to come out. They ought to be in one room coming out. And, you know, I really thought the pig was going to destroy the place. It ended up being the motorcycle did the most damage. I had to replace boards on my porch and get a new door.
Oh, wow.
The motorcycle was just so heavy. It's 1,000 pounds, yeah. You know.
Wow.
Wow.
And meanwhile, Max is just looking off into the distance, playing, you know, on a piece of luggage. And just like, no big deal. There's a pig and guy's on fire right next to me. I'm fine.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But that's the whole thing, right, with the message of the lyrics and everything is all the chaos going on around you, but everything that you need is right there.
That's right. Well, it's like the happiness is not guaranteed. That song, it was about Breezy had Breezy had cancer when she was 19, right before we met.
Oh boy.
And she had to have, you know, several organs removed. She only has one ovary and she had ovarian cancer. So when you have had cancer, cancer is a big risk, right? That it's you live in constant fear it's going to come mm-hmm. back because the statistics mm-hmm. say that it does. So she had a cancer scare. It was a real bad one. And it just really looked like maybe she had cancer again. And that's when I wrote that song. That's what that song's about. That song, We Deserve a Happy Ending, is about cancer. Whew. So I didn't want it to be, you know, some cutesy sort of thing. I kind of wanted it to be messed up. And I do that a lot in my videos. Like, you know, like Devils Look Like Angels. Mm-hmm. You know, like that song is a heavy song. You know, I wrote that song as a heavy song. And like, that's why And I wanted it to be to kind of, you know, for that video, I wanted to drive home the point that, you know, those devils don't look like who you think they look like. They look like anybody. And, you know, you check out that video. That's why that was the case. I wanted to be, you know, sort of heavy and I think the video makes you smile. Like, I mean, but it's not like smile like this is funny. It's like, oh my God, like what is going on here?
You know, I can't believe I'm watching this.
Like, yeah, that's what it's more like that. Like, and it's messed up. Like a lot of really dark things happen. Like there's a guy gets killed. A dude's on fire. You know, right. There's like a lot of crazy stuff that's very heavy that happened, you know, and they're all in a one room log cabin in Brown County, Indiana.
Timed perfectly.
Yeah. And all timed perfectly the first time. Wow. It's insane, but it ended up being, ended up working out. You know, end up being perfect, and that's why I think it's my favorite video. You get into that and you start kind of going down the rabbit hole of our videos and stuff, and like it's kind of weird that like a band like us it likes making music videos so much. But like I said, I come up at a time when you know there was still stuff like that on television, right. and I like it. So
right. The visual, yeah.
I like doing them, and they're fun, yeah, right? Fun. And also too, then I get to paint a picture in someone's mind before they have done it themselves necessarily. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like I get to tell them a little bit more about what I want them to think about when they are listening to the song. So that to me is very important.
And we've talked about that too with some other songs that we've kind of taken a dive into. Is you know, it's not really the same as it was back in the 90s where you write a song and it's not just a song, right? You write a song and it's like it's a product. You have the album and the single and the artwork within the album, and then you have the video that goes along with it and all that, and it sometimes influences the entire theme for your tour and all your marketing and everything. And so that's not so much anymore because you don't need to do single releases and sending out, you know, single.
Yeah, it's different now. Stuff, I mean, so. I think that for a lot of artists, that still happens, mm-hmm. you know, but it's definitely different. Yeah. It's not like it used to be. And, you know, so artists now, you're going to start seeing like in the next 10 years, you're probably going to see bands not even have albums.
Yeah.
They're just going to release singles. They're going to do a song every month or two, and they're going to drop that. And, it doesn't, cause it's not gonna make much sense cause there's not going to be product. Like, right. you know, people, the CDs are going the way of the, right. of the dinosaur. Vinyl luckily is keeping us afloat on the road merch wise because you know people just aren't buying CDs like they used right. to. And I know, I mean, I don't buy CDs anymore. I buy vinyl.
Yeah,
you know, like I support a band by buying the vinyl because then I've got big artwork. I've got the lyrics usually are in the vinyl. Yep. I can listen to it on the my stereo at home, which is just so great to listen to vinyl on, and it's just a better experience. So I do that. And then when I'm traveling or moving about, I'm just like everybody else. I'll put on the
MP3 rates. Yeah, exactly. So how did this song come to be? Like, obviously we talked about where the inspiration for the lyrics came from and stuff, but, mm-hmm. Did this start with that riff? I want to use that to kind of get into a little bit of how you come up with your guitar sounds, because you have some crazy equipment and some of the sounds are so different. You don't hear it anywhere else. So,
well, I use a lot of vintage stuff. So like the sounds are all like what you hear on this record is a 1939 amplifier.
Wow.
With it's actually in the video, I played one of my resonators, but I didn't really play that on the record. On the record, I actually played a Supro. It's the prototype of the dual tone. The guitar was made in about 1952. Uh-huh. And there's different opinions on when it was made because it's a prototype and it wasn't one of their normal releases. There's very few of them. I happen to have this very rare Supro, and it's one of my favorite guitars. So that's what you hear on the record. What you see in the video, I didn't play it because I thought the my old steel resonator just looked cool for the video.
It does look
so
really cool.
I didn't
cool.
play it. It looks great, doesn't it? I mean, it just looks great. If I played that a yellow Supro, it might not have looked as cool. So I played that. But it actually, what you're hearing is that. So one night it was about 4 a.m. and I stay up really late. Like I'm like a bat, man. I'm like nocturnal, like a flying squirrel. Like I just I'm up all night long, and at about 4 a.m. I come up with the main chorus of it. and it was just like that shuffle. And, you know, like what you hear is on that record is like the bass line that's run the entire time, that shuffling bass line is my thumb. And then my fingers are playing all the slide licks, the triplets and things that happen are all, it's all happening at once. And I just started doing that. And I play lots of music. I play a lot of guitar all the time, constantly playing. So that poured out of me, that the refrain. And then the whole song came. I mean, just boom, just like instantly. And like very, whenever that happens, man, I swear it's like the best songs. Like sometimes, man, I'll work on a song. I might work on a song for years, you know, like, oh man, this ain't quite right. I got to fix this riff, or, oh man, what if I try this key or that key or this, that, you know, I do all kinds of stuff to it. And then sometimes with what We Deserve a Happy Ending, it all came at once.
I've heard that before. The best songs are the ones that write themselves. Wow. Right?
And it was instant. It was an instant. Yep. And it was so good. I was so into it. I almost woke Breezy up, which would have probably been a death sentence. But I was just absolutely, because Breezy, not that way. She's an early morning person. She gets up real early, goes to bed early. But it with that song, I just knew it was something special. And I'd planned on, you know, for a lot of reasons, man, going in and making this that record, Front Porch Sessions, which was, you know, largely a solo thing. Not entirely, but it's, you know, it was very much like a solo record where the Big Damn Band was coming in and just doing some stuff for me a little bit.
Yeah, a lot of that music is, you can tell, it's very subdued compared to.
Yeah, I mean, it's also just 90% of it's just me and a guitar, you know? So I didn't really have like, I didn't have a single, a lead song. I didn't have a real linchpin for it. And this was 2 days before I was supposed to go in the studio to make this record. At 4 a.m., the song just
poured out. It comes out. I wish that would happen to me.
And it was born. It happened because of the trouble that we were going through. Right. That's really what it is. And then, so then I had this song. It's like, man, you know, what do we do? So I recorded it just me and the guitar because that's why I played it. And this record was going to be just that. But we wanted to add just a little bit more, you know, there's washboard on it. And we added a little bit of that percussion. That's the suitcase and stuff to kind of give it a little bit more of a finished feel because it just felt like it was, you know, greater than the record even, you know, it just really felt like it was something. So then it comes out, we're going to have the video. And that's how that video sort of came to be. And we needed a video for it. And I had planned on doing all of these videos for that. They were kind of like the video for One More Thing and the video for One Bad Shoe that we did with Tyler, where they're very much like just, you know, visually beautiful, but just me playing and singing the song. Yeah. This one is felt like it needed one of our real production videos like we are sort of known for. Mm-hmm. And when we kind of got it together and started doing it, you know, like I get an idea in my head, man, and it's real tough for me to get it out. And like, I'll chase it down to like, I mean, to my detriment, you know, and it's almost a compulsion. Like I can't help it like that, like setting someone on fire for that video. I don't think that I would be alive now if I hadn't figured it out because I would have just done it till I was dead. Like it's a problem. Like it's been like that my whole life, but I'll just do it. I'm relentless. And I was just relentless. I'm like, I will set someone on fire. And I wish would have went and found someone. I would have picked, I don't know what I would have done. I don't want to say it out loud what my plan B was, because it probably is only partly legal. But I was going to set someone on fire in my house. Like it just had to be done, because I just felt like it needed to happen, you know. And then when it did, it was all said and done. It was like, man, this is either we're a hero or we're a pariah. And I'm like, put the fear of God. I'm like, look, we can't burn down my house. We can't burn up Jim. We can only do this once. I said, I told him this, and I really felt like we could do it twice safely. I really did. But I knew we could do it once. And I said, look, if we have to do this twice, I don't know how safe it is. And I know Jim's going to do it anyway. So we have to get this right the first time. You all understand, please. We cannot burn Jim up. And they all looked like, oh God. Yeah. Okay. All right. And
all right, let's go.
I heard somewhere someone took a video of him on fire in our house with all those people. And I said, I better never see that video anywhere. Like please get rid of that video. I don't want to see that. Don't know that getting out. There is nothing can be legal about that. And definitely it's all stupid. So let's just know that it worked and it's fine. But we did a lot of stuff. Like I emptied out my house. I had fire blankets over the ceiling and the walls and the area where he was going to be burned in the floor. We have fire extinguishers inside and out. We had the guy that was a firefighter in the video. It was a real firefighter who brought some extra firefighting equipment. The cop in the video, real cop, just in case for safety. We had tons of people outside with fire extinguishers. I said, if something goes wrong, Jim's just going to barrel off this porch and you put him out. And when he's off the porch, put him out immediately. Like, put him out, you know, like whatever happens, you know, get him out. So, and Jim had kind of worked up. I'm like, you got to just kind of like be on fire in this area and then get your ass off the porch so the next thing can happen.
And don't come near me because you're going to burn my arm. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, he was supposed to kind of like stay in an area. He got a little close to me and that almost, if you watch the video again, like I said, you'll see me kind of like, what? Because he got real close and one of those flames, it doesn't look like it's as close as it is because the way that the porch is so small and that fisheye lens, but like it kind of got me. You know what I mean? I was like, oh God, what is this? But you know, ultimately at the end of the day, man, it worked. And I love the song. It's one of my favorite songs I've ever made up. It, despite sort of its dark beginning, it ended up being okay. It was a false alarm on the cancer at that time. Thank God. Awesome. And, so that worked out. I love playing it. You know, it's a fun song to sing and play.
I was going to ask you that. Fast forward when you're playing that, all kinds of emotions come back, or all kinds of visuals come back, or is just that's one that the crowd just interacts with so well. I mean, how does that?
Yeah, I mean, every song every song I relive. So I have to be careful. Like there's certain songs I don't play. You know, I just don't play them a lot. And people go, man, why you play that song? Because I have to feel that song every time I play it, and I don't like feeling like that.
Right.
You know, it's fun for the record, and go listen to it on the record. You know, I'm not going to do it every show, right. But that song is, it's okay because it was born of that, and that's really what it's about. But you know, ultimately it was a good
result,
outcome.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Good result.
So it almost brings back those secondary feelings that you get, you know.
Yeah, and you know, everything that is now, there's all those new memories with the video and everything too. So
I can only imagine what the after party of that video was like.
Oh man, it was more like it also too, you have to know it was February and it was cold. And but I didn't want it to look like it was cold, you know what I mean? So if you look at it, it's like we're sitting out there like it was February, cold. And my buddy Hondo had put a little heater on the wall of my porch aimed back at us so we could sit there like we were pretty warm. But everybody else was freezing.
Except Jim.
Yeah. He was hot for a minute. Then he was cold because he was slathered in this stuff. His whole body was covered in this special gel. I don't really want to explain how we did it because I don't want anyone doing it. And then then they go, Reverend Peyton told me how to burn myself.
That's right.
Yeah. We don't need that on our show.
Now I'm permanently disfigured. Yeah. You know, I don't want that. Woo-hoo. So don't try it at home. Like it really was a dumb thing. And I'm an insane person, and you shouldn't ever like take any kind of life advice from a literal insane person. So don't do that. Don't burn your friends up. That could have been really bad.
And when you come to one of the shows, don't light things on fire when you're standing in the crowd.
Washboard.
Don't do that.
Now, fire is not to be played with.
Not your friend.
And we really did like it. There wasn't much different from what we did than what they would have done on a Hollywood set. And that's the God's honest truth. Like I researched it to the point where like, I mean, I got books about stuntmen and everything. And that was when I realized, I'm like, we're not going to find a stuntman that'll do this. Like we can't afford to pay him. It's like double to get someone to set themselves on fire. Like they don't want to do it. They're like, I'll jump out of a window. You can drop me from an airplane. I'll hang off the bottom of a helicopter. I will, you know, you can put me in a straitjacket, bury me in a coffin. Like I will do anything. I will not set myself on fire. I won't do it. There's a lot of stuntmen that just literally won't even do it for any amount of money. Because if something goes wrong, it's not like, oh, I broke my arm. I'm being a cast for 6 weeks. Like, it's like, oh, I burnt my hand off. You know what I mean? Like literally. Yeah. And in order for the fire to be really visible on camera, it has to be a pretty intense fire.
Yeah, I can see that.
So it's not just like I remember one time a kid freaked me out when I was like in middle school. He poured like, I think it was nail polish remover or something all over his legs and set on fire. And it looked like he was on fire a little bit. And I'm like, oh my God. And he's laughed like, oh man, it was just this. It was something like that. Some kind of bathroom. I think it was acetone or something. I don't know. But that wouldn't show up on camera. Like that kind of little bit of flame. It needs to be a smoldering black smoke giant orange fire. So like, he was way more on fire than it actually looks on camera because the way cameras shoot fire. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
So it has to be over the top, you know? So like it was so hot. The flames coming off of that were so hot and the smoke was so black and it was so dark that it was insane. It was intense, man.
Yeah, but, you are crazy. You're right.
Yeah.
I know we've just met and I probably shouldn't insult my guests there, but yeah, you're nuts.
No, it is. Yeah. It's absolutely nuts. And I don't know who is crazier. Me, the guy that was like, hey, Jim, my best friend, I'm going to set you on fire for a 4-minute song. Right. Or the guy that was like, hey, man, you can set me on fire. I'm not sure which one, but man.
First in line.
Yes.
I'm glad it was me and Jim, though. Jim is like, we've had a lot of cool adventures together, man. He's helping me with our next videos, too. Like, I can't talk about them because it's a surprise, but you're going to see an apparatus in one of the videos. I'm just going to say an apparatus. And it's going to be kind of in the background, but people are going to look at it and go, how'd they do that?
Oh man, and, you're killing me. And Jim, now I'm dying to hear.
Jim built it. He created it. But he's a he's a professional blacksmith. He's he was an iron worker for many years, a union iron worker. He was a lineman, so he's a union electrician. He has done he's hunted everything that moves and breathes in North America. He has caught every fish that swims. He survives mainly on mushrooms that he catches himself out of the woods. He's a big forager, and not just mushrooms, but plants. He's an expert on plants and plant food and plant medicine. He is he's incredible. And I was over there yesterday watching him blacksmith. And we're in the middle of this pandemic, so I'm not around hardly anybody. But he's one of the guys that he comes over. We go over there, and we just don't go anywhere else.
He's in your bubble. Yeah.
But he was blacksmithing last time, watching him do it. And he's just picking the crap up with his bare hands. And I'm like, good, Jim, put some gloves on. Oh, it ain't that hot. My hands don't feel anymore anyway. And he's just picking it up with his bare hands. Like,
Rev, I mean, don't you remember that time you set my entire body on fire? Get out of here.
Well, I mean, that's just it. I thought, man, I wonder if he really did get burned and just didn't know it.
Yeah, that's kind of lucky for you. So
here's the deal. I burn up all of our time talking about this one song, no, fellas.
No, all good.
I hope that's okay.
Oh,
no, that's
me.
All
Love
good.
It.
We
Love
can.
It.
I mean, if you're willing to talk about the next one, we can go on to the next one too.
Sure, we can. If you think there's that we can do it, we can talk about it. I may not spend as much time on it.
That's fine. I wanted to ask you before. I mean, but video not included. What's your favorite part of this song? What's your favorite thing about this song? It's something that we ask each other all the time. So.
Oh, okay. Well, this was the first time I put on record, and this is going to be a really dumb guitar nerdy thing. All right. So people listening to this, they're going to probably be like, what? But this is the first time I put on record where I can play a triplets with my fingers, and then I can shuffle with my thumb at the same time. And as far as I know, I'm the only person alive that can do it.
I've seen a video of you playing at one of the clubs where you played two different songs at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember if it was like Yankee Doodle and another song or something.
Yeah, Yankee Doodle and Dixie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. Normally when people play country blues and they play triplets in this style, they cease to shuffle with their thumb. They do a thing called what's called drop thumb or dead thumb. And then they might go back like how Lightnin' Hopkins did it, is he would shuffle, and then when he's playing triplets, he would go to dead thumb and then play the triplets and then go back to shuffling. Well, I have taught myself how to continue shuffling and playing triplets. And the first time that I put it on record that I could do it was this song. So that, for me, is my favorite thing about this song. It's a very guitar nerdy sort of thing. And I apologize for that.
No, that's
special. That's what's great. Cool
about and if our listeners aren't really sure what you mean by that, just listen to the track, listen to that bass line, that shuffle bass line, and the slide lead at the same time. And just realize that those are both being played by the same person on the same guitar
at the same time.
Yeah.
And just try and really pay attention to those different sounds. And I think you'll kind of get what he's talking about there.
So. And as a nice segue, one of the other times that I have done this on record is Pour Until Payday. I'm doing a very similar. It's a both these songs. Smooth. Of all the songs that are shuffles, you know, we picked two shuffles, and Porn Till Payday is a shuffle in the same way, and in this exact same way that I do it on the other one, where I'm playing triplets at the same time I'm shuffling. It's very much the same in terms of that style. So it's these songs are very different songs, but both of them are shuffles and both of them have triplets. So in order to, you know, make it happen, both those things are similar. So
that's awesome.
I'm Brian Colburn.
And I'm Jay Sweet.
And we're the co-hosts of Tune Styles, a podcast aimed at the music nerd in us all.
Each listener interactive episode hones in on a different musical topic or artist.
Featuring guest interviews, listener polls, and roundtable discussions about the music that shaped the soundtrack to our lives.
You can find us at TuneStylesPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, or wherever your favorite podcasts are found.
Subscribe to Tune Styles and be a part of our weekly musical conversation.
Stay tuned.
That is the next song that we're going to listen to. It's Porn Till Payday. And I highly recommend you watch a video, because we're going to talk about the video a little bit too, just like we did with this one. So go ahead into the playlist or click the link in the show notes and listen to it and come back and we will talk about it.
All right.
You're back.
Perfect. We are back. So Porn Till Payday, I'll tell you where this song was born from. Where We Deserve a Happy Ending was born of a sort of a cancer scare. This song was born of something my mom said. And what's funny is that I have done this a lot. Like said some of the Hoosierisms that come out of my mom and dad, I will sometimes be like, that's perfect, you know. But my mom said, she goes, I said, well, how you doing, Mom? I was in Denmark on tour, talking to her over the phone. I'm like, hey, Mom, how's it going? We're in Denmark on tour. And she goes, well, I'm good. Just pouring till payday. You know, I'm having trouble. As soon as we get up, you know, like this, it was just something she said. And I was like, oh my God, that's the best line for a song I ever heard. I'm like, cool, Mom, I got you, go.
It really is. I mean, before I even listened to the song, when you first released it, you like relate to it, because we've all been that paycheck to paycheck.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
Exactly. You know exactly what that means. And it was just something my mom said. So then I start working on this song, right? And I'm just like, it's another one where it's like all coming out at once. I'm like, oh my God, this is so great. I'm like thanking the universe that brought me this song. I'm like, thank you for this one. This is so great. Thank you for this one. Thank you. And so then we were staying at this, we were playing it and staying at this weird commune in Denmark where they had this music festival, and everybody that lived there, it's kind of like what we would say, like a hippie commune.
I remember you talking about this on Hard Times and Weirdness.
Yep.
Yeah. So we're staying on this hippie commune, and it's like, I mean, they like had an area where like you're supposed to use the bathroom in the woods, that like the special plants they have was supposed to filter it in the ground. Like, I'm not kidding. Like, it was just, I mean, it was this hippie weird ass place. It was really cool. Everyone was really great. We had a great time. And they had this trailer set up, kind of like a green room for us, you know. So we're hanging out in this, and I'm playing the song myself. And I go find Breezy. I'm like, Breezy, you got to come in here. I got to play this song for you. So she comes in and I play it, and she goes, yeah, it's pretty cool, I guess. I'm like, pretty cool, you guess? I'm like, this is like maybe the best thing I ever made up in my life. Like, what are you talking about? So she's kind of shrugged it off. And I was like, oh, no, she's wrong. But, you know, it wasn't like she didn't like it. She just doesn't get super excited when I am like that. She says that she has to, so that I don't get too.
You need
myself,
someone to keep you grounded. I get that.
But I just knew it was just a hit. You know, I'm like, this is a hit. This is a hit. A hit. So when it came time for the video for this one, I had this idea. I wanted to have a Cadillac be towed by a tow truck. That was my idea. And people are like, what? You want a Cadillac to be towed by a tow truck? I'm like, yeah. I go, but first I just want you to see the Cadillac so it looks like it's this awesome car, and then it's being towed. I'm like, that's what I want it to be like.
Well,
no one really got it. No one really got it at first, like I'm telling them. And then I told Breezy, I go, so I need a Cadillac. And she goes, people in hell want ice water, man. Like, you ain't getting a Cadillac. I go, no. Like, I really need one for the video. We're going to need to get a Cadillac. And, you know, she's like, this is like, I've done a lot of really dumb stuff, but buying a Cadillac is not it, you know? So I had sold my truck I had this 1972 Chevy Cheyenne pickup truck, and I sold it, and I actually sold it real cheap to a fan who was getting over brain cancer. And I took the little bit of money I had and some other money, and I started researching a Cadillac. Because anyone knows me knows that the only car I've ever wanted my whole life was a Cadillac convertible. Well, I didn't really think I was going to be able to get one. I thought I'd find a junk one and just have it towed around and then maybe sell it, or, you know, sell it for scrap or something. But I got obsessed with it and thought, man, maybe I'll be able to find one. So just like setting someone on fire, all I did all day long was look at Cadillacs for sale all over the country. And I ended up finding one. I won't tell too much of the story because I don't want to out them, but some people were selling one in Brown County. And
no,
they end up selling it to me for about 35% of what they asked.
Wow.
And so I was, because there's no way I could afford a car.
Locally, you found this car locally.
Yeah. Yep.
After all that.
That's right. After all that.
Come on.
In my county. So,
wow.
And you got to know that after 2008, all the big old Cadillacs were melted down for scrap when everyone got hard up because they're so big. So they are rare, man. And parts for it is rare and hard to get.
Can I pause you right there to tell you a story? I want to tell you a quick story. So
this is a good dad son.
When I was growing up, we loved antique cars too. And I always said my first car is going to be an antique car. I want to get an antique car. And so we spent years going to, you know, looking online and looking in the ad books and everything, and going all over Tarnation looking for some old cars. And I loved Cadillacs, and I always wanted a Cadillac. And so we finally found one that ended up being my very first car. And it was you ready for this? It was a black 1970 Cadillac Sedan DeVille.
Really? Not convertible.
Sedan.
No, four-door.
Vinyl top.
Which is the same one. I've got the two-door.
Yep, DeVille, this is the four-door.
1970. I've got the two-door convertible. When my first car, there was a buddy of my dad's that he got a hold of a 1979 Eldorado. And he got it because some kid wrecked their uncle's car, and the uncle was mad and said, look, if you pay the impound fee, you can have it. So then this guy got it, and he didn't want it, so he sold it to my dad for the cost of the impound fee. So I had this really, just absolutely destroyed 1979 Eldo. It was coffee colored, like the Chuck Berry song. Coffee colored Cadillac, Nadine. Which was so awesome. Nadine. You know, exactly, Nadine. Yeah. So I thought it was the coolest thing in the world, right? But I would always try to park it where the wreck side was on one side, like against a wall or something you can see. Yeah. I'd pull up. I'd go around the block to pull up in front of people's houses. So I parked the nice side.
That's awesome.
I was always so embarrassed. But the engine started going out. My dad's like, we got to get rid of this. There's no way we can afford to maintain this. So I only had it for a short time, but I loved it. And I was always like, I need to get a Cadillac again. So now I've got my Cadillac. So now I use it for like all of our photos, and I'd say in all of our videos. It makes a cameo in like everything we do. Yep. But it all was born because I had this idea that I wanted to have an old Cadillac towed by a tow truck.
Well, it's such a nasty looking car, the 70 with that big grill.
I know, man. It's awesome because the 1970s got the 1970 big front with the cool 1960s back. I think it might be the best year.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well,
I was so in love with that car. I miss it dearly. We got kind of screwed when we got rid of it.
When Sean started telling me first about, you know, your band and started sending the music and everything else, initially, I think one of the first videos was this, and I was immediately drawn into, hey, look, there's your caddy right there.
Well, that's what it was.
The music came secondary.
I knew the song was coming out, and I went to watch it, and as soon as I saw the Cadillac, I lost my mind.
Because
I was like, that's my car.
That's cool, man.
I was like, that's my car. Rev freaking stole my car and chopped the roof off.
chopped the roof off. But wait a minute. What he didn't tell you, though, is this was a four-door version, and even though you have the nice black leather in yours, his was purple brocade. Interior.
Oh yeah, mine was a mob car.
Oh
yeah.
Wow!
It was custom.
Yeah, that's
Providence,
custom.
Rhode
that
Island.
Didn't come from Cadillac like that.
it was hideous, wonderfully hideous.
Wow, was that a Rhode Island? Like out of Providence, maybe?
It was.
Yeah, it was out of Providence.
Oh
yeah,
so my goodness! It was a mob car then.
I think you could probably fit up to 12 bodies in there somewhere.
Oh, the trunk is unbelievable. I bet I could fit. I'm not exaggerating. I think I could put 6 or 7 guitar cases in it with the necks pointing toward the front. I mean, it's incredible. It's just amazing how huge it is.
It's an awesome car.
Fire in it too.
It's like driving a boat. It's like driving a boat. I love it. But
it's 21 feet long.
21
feet long.
this is a 14-year-old kid who this is his first car driving to the high school when he turned 16. So yeah,
that's awesome, man. That fun. Mob cars, that's cool. I wish my interior was purple. I wish my interior was purple. I got the leather interior from the factory, man. Not a cool purple interior. I need that.
I was nervous that you were going to say, yeah, I got mine from this place up in Londonderry, New Hampshire. I chopped the roof off and I redid I put leather on the seats, and I was going to say, how's my car drive, Rev?
Mine's actually in such good condition under the hood. I don't think it was drove much. It says it has 45,000 miles on it. I don't know if it's 145 or 45. You know how that goes.
Yeah.
But the under the hood looks so nice. It almost makes me wonder if it's 45. It just doesn't look like it's been. It's That's rusty nice. On it because it needs painted and like the rust fixed, just from like salt in the winter. You know, someone's had it in the winter. It wasn't garaged at some point, I don't think. Or if it was covered, it was on, it wasn't on like pavement or something. I'm not sure. It definitely, you can tell there's some salt underneath it, but the under the hood, like everyone that opens the hood up, they go, oh my goodness, look at this thing. You know, they got the original 472. Did yours have the 472 in it?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Yep. Have the mod have to, they wouldn't have drove it if they didn't have 472. Yep.
It wouldn't, it's too heavy. You need it.
Yep. You need it. And
you need it just to move.
And those guys would have wanted to go fast. It's cool, man. That's awesome.
10 gas stations to the mile, right?
That's just so funny. That just, I instant connection with that video. I saw that comment.
That's cool, man. I love that.
The thing that I love about this song the most is just that you just hit that riff in the beginning.
Yeah,
right. Exactly. And then I've mentioned this in a lot of episodes. One of my favorite things in music is when people stop right before a chorus and they just cut all the music and they just sing either a one-liner, pre-chorus, something like that.
Dude, Sean, I love it too. I love stops in music. Stuff. I love it.
Yep, that's one of my favorite things. And that is how this song starts. You hit that big slide riff and then you just start with that.
Boom. Yep, I love it too. I always have stops. I think it's the funnest thing in the world.
That is my favorite part of that song, is that very beginning. I absolutely love it. That's cool, man.
That's awesome. Thank you. I really love this song. I thought it was like... I still think it's one of my favorite songs to play. It's fun to sing. It's definitely my favorite song to sing.
Yeah.
Like as far as like unreleased songs, our new record, there's some stuff that's going to rival it. But as far as my favorite song to sing, I think it's Born Till Payday. I love singing this song. It's just the lyrics are pretty self-explanatory, but it was all born of that thing my mom said, which is so perfect. And it's in a very weird key, which I love. It's in
right, but it sits so comfortably in the cheek of that like 12-bar.
Yeah, exactly. Blues. Well, so it's a shuffle like 12-bar blues, but it's not a 12-bar. So like the actual chorus, is let's see, I have to do it in my mind. The chorus is just 1-5-1. So it never, and then the verses go 1-4-5-1. So like it's like, and I do that a lot where because in the old country blues, man, they would do tons of stuff where they didn't follow the 12 bar pattern always. Right. So that's one of my tricks is I will do things like if I'm going to do a shuffle, like if Reverend Payton's going to shuffle, which is a pretty standard blues style thing, I'm probably not going to do a regular 12 bar blues. Like that's going to be something you're not going to see me do. I'm going to definitely do something weird to it. It'll be different because I like to make things be a little bit, I don't know. I like to have a little bit unexpected. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't want your mind to be drawn in. And I also I'm obsessed with making things be catchy because I think music should be easily caught on, right? Yeah. I mean, it's like Mozart, man. Mozart is so great. We're still humming Mozart's tunes because, he had a quote, and I don't forget exactly what it is, but it probably doesn't translate the same. But he wanted the janitor at the theater to be singing it on the way out. That's what he said, humming his songs.
Beautiful. Nice. Nice.
Because what he was saying, he was writing music for these very hope, bougie people, sitting around listening to it. But he wanted it to be anybody could listen to it. You don't have to be an expert. You don't have to know what it even is. It's like, I don't know what this is, but I like it. And, that's what I want. I want people to be able to, I don't want it to be so like complex that you have to have a music degree to get it,
Right.
Right. That's what I was going to ask you. I mean, does it make it more complicated because it keeps it more interesting for you?
Well, I just do stuff I like, man. Like, I don't really sit around and think. I don't go, man, like, I'm going to write a song that everyone's going to like. I do stuff I like, And, I mean, like, to me, like, I hate it when music is trying too hard, one. Mm. I hate it when a song is
Too predictable, yeah.
Too predictable or too complex, you know? Yeah, like, I think both those things are bad. It should be unique, and it should also be easy to hang your hat on it, you know? But both those are true. And they're hard to do sometimes to make it all happen. And especially, like, me as a guitar player, I have to kind of fight my own instincts to overdo stuff a lot, you know? It's like, with Pour Until Payday, it's like, man, I could have done this, could have done that. And it's like, nah, let's just strip this down. And I ended up doing I didn't even put a slide solo in it. The solo is the harmonica, which is weird, you know? But I wanted to do that because I thought, man, I'm sliding all over this thing, and people would expect a slide solo. I had one fan go, man, that song been perfect, but you didn't play a slide solo in it. And I'm like, well, I did it on purpose. I wanted to do something a little different, but you know, you can't win them all. You can't please everybody. But in my mind, when I did it, it just felt right. I thought, man, there's all that, like that slide's coming in. Even if I did a solo, it would be, similar in kind of what the riffs are that are happening between the vocal phrases. And I thought, man, you know what? Let's do something different. Let's come at him with the harmonica.
Yeah, I think that was the right choice because it really brings a different element to it, but it fits so well with the sound of that song because of the setup and how comfortable it is, and that it kind of like pierces through that comfortability, so it kind of stands out a little bit. I think that was a really good call.
And with those stops you were talking about, with that stop right there, then it gives me just a bar where I can be playing the harmonica and not have to play the guitar at the same time, so I can do some more intricate stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and then I follow, sort of the melody. And each time it's a stop, it's like a little bit crazier. So I can go a little bit more wild. Then I get back to playing and singing playing the harmonica and, you know, doing all that stuff at once. And and just like, you know, that this song was all recorded live. I sang it live, played it live, everything in the studio.
That's awesome.
Wow.
I love it.
And again, it comes across as that sheer joy. And I know the video was supposed to kind of show that stuff, but you can just feel that. You know, there's just a whole different kind of feel.
Sense of community,
I'll tell you about the video.
Is your friends and family as well.
Well, just check this out. The video, I had to close off four city blocks in two different towns, one in Bloomington, Indiana, one in Nashville, Indiana. There was about 400 volunteers. There was a drone. There was a cherry picker, tow truck, Cadillac. We wrecked two cars.
Saw that, right.
As far as production, it was the most of this kind of stuff we've ever done. We've never done anything on that level. It was really insane. And all those people are volunteers. We just said, hey, we need some people. And we wrote to people that had been in other videos and then put out a call to some certain people, dancers and whatnot.
Goats and.
Yeah, goats. We had the goat. That was another thing. I wanted to have some animals. So I got a friend that has goats there was supposed to be some other stuff. Like whenever you do that, like you always expect people to cancel. There was a lot of people that didn't show up because it was supposed to rain that day, and some people thought it wasn't going to happen. But there was the rain held off enough to get it done.
That's awesome. Now, do you have to pay the goat scale and something like that?
Yeah, everybody's volunteer.
Okay, good. You
know, we can't afford to pay people for these things.
Yeah,
they gotta just believe in us. They got to believe in making art. That's all I can do, you know.
Well done.
I was just going to say, I love the song. I love the record. I got it on vinyl. I play it all the time. My daughter's a big fan of Can't Steal My Shine.
Cool, yeah.
But I before we finish up and close out and talk about your podcast and things like that, I got to tell you, the one song that I could play on repeat over and over again, and I have done this in my car many times, is Let Your Light Shine.
Mm-hmm.
From the Front Porch Sessions. I think that is just gorgeous. So I wanted to give you props
for
that.
Thanks,
because
man.
That song gets to me. I love that.
Yeah, I love all that old gospel stuff, man. It's very much influenced my music. I mean, and not just, I'm not talking subject. I'm talking about the musically, you know, like my shows. Like,
that's what it is.
I want I want that kind of feeling, that like Tent Revival sort of feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I want that to sort of be the vibe that you get when you're at one of our shows, you know, You Can't Steal My Shine. I mean, that sounds, it sounds like a gospel song.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. You know? Yeah.
And it was, you know, that was,
and that's an amazing message.
And I love
the fact that my daughter is into that one, because I love the message.
I love that. I love hearing that kind of stuff, man. I mean, you never know how a song's going to resonate with people, if they're going to get, you know, but that song is one, like where we talked about these other songs that instantly came out. I worked on You Can't Steal My Shine for at least 2 years.
Wow.
And it was because I just couldn't make it mesh together with what I wanted. And I had that line and I was like, man, how's this going to work? So what it ended up being is it's actually two songs that I combined. And I had another song that had that was basically the verses, and then another song that was the chorus, and I just put them together. And that solved my little puzzle. I'm like, there it is. That's the song. There it is. So, and it, when it happened, when I did it, it was kind of like I had to kill another song. I had to steal its melody, you know, for that, but it was worth it. Because if something happened to me, I said, I hope that I'm remembered for a song like You Can't Steal My Shine.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
I can see that.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, before we wrap up, I want to first say thank you so much for getting us out of your hair, agreeing to do this, so we'll stop bothering you.
And again, I apologize. I'm sorry.
You know, like I said, when we first started, I was talking to Dad. I was like, yeah, it'd be cool if we could get some musicians on eventually to talk about some of their songs. You know who I'd love to have? I'd love to have Brian Fallon, and I'd love to have Reverend Peyton. And so we're really happy that
you could probably get Brian Fallon too. He's a great guy. So you could probably.
Well, I know he follows you because I'm that creepy, and I've noticed that he's liked some of your Instagram stuff. So, you know, if you want to give a shout out to him and just say, hey, these guys that you're not listening, they're pretty cool dudes. You should.
Well, when it comes out, maybe I'll share it. And if he's following, maybe he'll see it. That'd be
there. We go. Yeah. It should come out in the next few weeks. I'll let you know. I may even split it into a two-parter because we went pretty long, but.
Cool.
But before we go, I want to talk about your podcast too, because you are a podcaster. You're one of us.
That's right. Yes. Everyone's a podcaster now. It's what you have to do, especially since I'm currently pretty much unemployed. I'm doing a lot of weird stuff. As we speak, you know, this of course is this, the coronavirus pandemic has shut down the music industry, but our main podcast is called Hard Times and Weirdness.
Yep.
And we've been doing that for a few years now, and it's a lot of fun. And we just sort of talk about our adventures, the hard times and weirdness that goes along with being a band like us on tour. And then we have a new podcast that we have a Patreon now. And our Patreon podcast is very similar to what we did today, where I just talk about one song. And it's with the band, and we go through and, like, I'll talk about every aspect of it, like what I was thinking when we did it, maybe what the, you know, get into the technical aspect of it, the equipment went into it, how we recorded, things like that, the whole deal. And it allows me to be very specific, and also
allows you to nerd out a little.
Yeah, exactly. And it allows me to be very nostalgic on that stuff. And and I love talking about music. Man, you'd be surprised. I the opportunity to talk about music is good, fellas, because all the time, man, I get asked some really moronic crap. Like, people are like, oh, you toured your wife. What's that like? I mean, like, it's always like that, right? It's like, you know, I get asked more about my beard than I do the songs. Like, it's crazy. And so, like, I actually really relish being able to talk about the music, be honest with you, and I appreciate that. So thank you.
Well, anytime you want to talk about music, you are more than welcome to come back.
Yeah, so here's the setup. So next time you come on here, we can do this one more time. I can completely stalk you some more. Because I have a million questions about the Sun Sessions and Steve Cropper and the 18 Instruments video. I mean, all the other stuff that we want to talk about forever, too. So feel free to jump back on. We'd love to do that stuff with you, too.
Maybe when the new record comes out, we can talk about one of the songs off the new record. That'd be too. We can talk about
that's
our
awesome.
Stuff, too.
Yeah.
What's your timeline on that, especially with COVID and everything else? Is it pushed up or isn't it?
Yeah, it was supposed to be October, but which is now. So it's supposed to be out now. But we're hoping April.
Good. Okay.
All right. Well, when that comes out, we'll make that happen. And once touring starts up again, if you ever make your way up to Massachusetts, New Hampshire, let us know. We'll get you a home-cooked meal, and we'll hang out, have some drinks and stuff.
That sounds great. If you ever find that purple interior Cadillac, man, let me know. I'm very interested in that. I'd like to
see some photos. I'll share some pictures with you. I'll share some, and I'll tag you on Instagram or something so you can take a look.
All right. That sounds good, fellas. Well, thanks so much, okay?
Thank you, Rev. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll make sure to let you know when it comes out. And if anyone who wants to hear more of his music, you know, check out the links, check out all of his videos and all his albums, and make sure you support him on Patreon, because that's how musicians are able to stay alive right now in these tough times.
It's rough right now, fellas, so we appreciate the plug, and thanks everybody for listening. So please check us out in all the places where you like finding music. You will find us. Sean, Jim, it was a pleasure. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Hello to Breezy for us.
Sure thing. Take care.
Bye. Bye-bye.